This is the HBR News number 374. Bakery beats Oberlin College. Texas wins free speech battle, where we discuss the stories of the week and give it the Badger treatment. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Honey Badger Radio, where we will be discussing the week's news stories. I am your host, Brian Martinez, and I'm joined by, as always, my lovely co-hosts, Hannah Wallen, Mike J., and Dr. Ranimer Cam. On today's HBR News show, we're going to be talking more about the news of the week. This week, we're going to be talking about some updates regarding Oberlin College and the family bakery. If you guys remember, there was a bakery that was slandered by the college as racist, and we have some developments regarding that. 141 people have been arrested in a child sex crime operation in, I believe, California. The Biden administration actually follows through on their promise to essentially gut protections for students accused of sexual assault on campus, see males, because that's who it's going to affect, and more. So stick around. It's going to be a good time. And be sure to join us afterwards for the patron-only show. And so on the patron-only show, we didn't finish the other article we were reading from a website called Nylon, which is like a girly, I guess it's like a girly feminist website. And they have an article called Hyperfemininity is Not a Trend, It's a Movement. Because, you know, everything women do is a movement now. Like everything. And they're essentially making statements constantly. And we all have to listen. So we're going to be looking at this. And it's essentially saying that, like, being girly and wearing pink and essentially trying to emulate like a Kardashian or, you know, Paris Hilton is an act of defiance.
When you think Paris Hilton is a good poster girl for your movement, that's some bad optics right there.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Well, but this is what they're doing. They're taking it back, Mike. They're taking ownership back. You know,
that's hot.
Yes. See, at the very least, Paris Hilton can laugh at herself, and I have to respect that. So, but yeah. So,
yeah, that's she was on a hot mic recently. This bit getting big on semi-viral, saying, "Ooh, gay guys are the most horny people in the world. It's disgusting."
I did not know that. I mean, like the part about her being on a hot mic, not the part about gay guys being the horniest. That I knew. So anyway, if you want to join us in the patron show, you have to become a Badger yourself by going to feedthebadger.com, starting up a monthly subscription. $5 a month will get you into the Discord, and then you'll be able to watch all of the additional content. You'll also be able to participate. Like a lot of the stories that we get that we either respond to in a Rant Zerker or in a maintaining frame show with Allison or a dating show, a lot of those are actually sent to us by people who are in our Discord. So they see articles that they want us to respond to. They see, you know, blogs, they could be videos, whatever. And they basically say, what do you guys think about this? And then if we think that, you know, there's something there worth discussing, which oftentimes there is, we will do a show on it. So maybe you want to be a part of that. Maybe you like the idea of being a part of a community that decides what direction the conversation goes. So, but to do that, you have to become a Badger. So go to feedthebadger.com. $5 a month will get you into the Discord, and you'll be able to participate in not only that, but there's lots of other activities and events going on. People are doing game nights. There's always people streaming. There's, you know, movie viewings on the weekends. So anyway, take that into consideration. And if you don't want to wake up one morning to find that we have been yeeted from the internet, then please go to badgerfeed.com. That's badgerfeed.com or honeybadgerradio.com. I think that at honeybadgerradio.com, it's all like the audio podcasts. So go ahead and check us out there. Really appreciate it. Please hit that like button now. I see that we have 12 likes and 22 people watching. So I think we can get those numbers up. And it, because it's good for us. Like, if you hit like, then it's more, I mean, like, the story is, I don't know if this is true, that it's a bit more likely to show up in someone's, like, homepage as a suggested video. So I'm open to trying that, you know? All right, so with all of that said, let's get into the stories. This first one is breaking. So I just wanted to, like, talk about this briefly because it just started happening. So X-Play host Frosk is out at G4 a week after layoffs. The former League of Legends commentator turned G4 host is leaving the network. Now, they're going to give us some backstory on this, but Frosk is the girl, or I'm sorry, I'm not sure that she identifies as a woman, but she's on the left side of the screen. I'm bad at this. I can't do the pronouns thing. A week after big layoffs rocked the network, so this is like last week, Kotaku has learned that X-Play host Indiana Frostgruen Black is no longer with G4. Comcast, G4's parent company, bought out the remainder of her contract. So they just paid her off to leave, okay? They paid her to get rid of her. Comcast, G4's parent company, bought out the remainder of her contract, according to two sources familiar with the business. The news was announced internally by head of the network, Joe Marsh, in a town hall meeting on Tuesday morning. So this morning, okay? Thank you so much to the at G4 TV and the talented X-Play and esports departments, Black wrote on Twitter today. Loved working with you guys. Gonna especially miss Gex. Black was one of the main hosts of X-Play, along Gerard, the completionist, Khalil, Corey, the Black Hokage Smallwood, and Adam Sessler, the host of the original version of the gaming talk show during its cable run in the 2000s. Sessler stepped back from the program earlier this year to address family medical issues. Black came to G4 from the League of Legends esports scene, where she was a color commentator. In addition to discussing the latest news and helping review games, Black was also occasionally outspoken, you think? Especially on, and by the way, this is a Kotaku article, so they're actually going to be, like, on her side in terms of the framing and everything. So they say, Black was also occasionally outspoken, especially on the misogynistic comments and harassment often leveled at the more diverse reboot of the network, including her personality. In a January episode, she called out the sexist expectations and double standards of some G4 viewers in a speech that co-host Adam Sessler called one of the, quote, most amazing things I have ever been part of on live TV, end quote. Two sources Kotaku spoke with. So this rant, by the way, is just her yelling at the fans without any, like, she didn't make any exceptions to people who haven't done it. She's basically just saying, like, there's a problem with sexism in gaming and it's the fault of the men. Full stop, right? Period. And I think that, like, her doing that essentially just showed us how sensitive she is, which essentially opened her up for trolling, which is, I think, what she got. Because, and look, I'm okay with that. I think that trolling is a just and, you know, good thing to do if people are getting, you know, a little too big for their britches. Like, and especially when you're doing this to your customers, like, they pay you. You know, like, you should be a little bit more gracious. So, and, like, really, nobody's gonna miss her. Like, this is the thing. Like, you know, there have always been women on the show, on this show, to my knowledge, because I didn't really watch it. But there have always been women on there. Like, Olivia Munn is particularly well-known for her time on the show. Before she went on to, like, be an actress, I think she was in, like, the X-Men movies or something at some point. So, you know, she went on to do a lot more, but the fans loved her because she knew what she was. Like, basically, they would do these comedy sketches. She would play, like, you know, the role of some sexy woman, in a lot of them, and she was okay with it because she was a sexy woman, and the fans liked that she was okay with it and embraced it. And, you know, everybody, it was a joke. It was like a thing that, like, everybody was in on, nobody cared about. And that was basically it. Like, she could sit in a giant, you know, champagne glass full of whipped cream, and people would find it, you know, cheeky but funny. But Frost didn't like that. She didn't want that kind of environment. She didn't, and she hated that people would compare Olivia Munn to her, which is weird because I guess she's a lesbian or something. But nonetheless, this is the problem. Like, she was essentially attacking her fans. So two sources Kotaku spoke with speculated that the timing of the decision may have been related to a September 15th tweet in which Black, that's Frost, posted a meme saying, "I survived." And I think this is actually true. So I should probably explain that. Let me open this tweet up in another window. Essentially, when the initial wave of layoffs came a week ago, she hadn't said anything about it. And then she learned, I guess at that time, that of all the people who lost their jobs, which, by the way, there were a series of layoffs, probably because of her rant about sexism, because that probably left her, or that channel or whatever it is, losing support. And so she made this tweet where she says, "I survived," which is basically like saying, "I didn't get fired like everybody else." So she's gloating about this. And I mean, this tweet got ratioed into oblivion. People were really pissed that she basically was gloating about the fact that, or what appeared to be the fact that she wasn't fired, even though she's probably the person who caused other people to get fired. And so this is like what people are saying probably got her fired, like for real. "It was likely aimed at those who had celebrated the G4 layoffs, hoping that Black would be among them. But it was also interpreted by many as tone deaf in the wake of so many people losing their jobs at the network just the day before. G4 and Black did not immediately respond to a request for comment. Black's departure seems far from the only likely shakeup coming, as G4 faces financial pressure to increase revenue while cutting costs. Three sources familiar with the business tell Kotaku that they expect a bigger focus on lower budget, personality-led Twitch streams instead of a more highly produced talk show and sketch comedy segments. According to one source, Kevin Pereira, I hope I'm not butchering
Kevin Pereira.
Pereira, the host of Attack of the Show, is also set to leave G4 sometime in October. Pereira did not immediately respond to a request for comment. So I just want to let you guys know that Frost has been canned, but it doesn't look like there wasn't any collateral damage because of her actions. So does anybody have any thoughts on this?
I can't believe they're being told to further scale things back. Like, to my knowledge, it's a YouTube channel.
Yeah, it's pretty bare bones already, isn't it?
Pretty much, yeah. With all the layoffs, I think they've got one set. They've got, you know, maybe a very small writing team. If they still have that anymore. And I think they laid off at least half of the staff. I literally think it's just the talent now and maybe a handful of producers.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, like, they can't do sketches. And that was kind of what people watched them for. Because the thing is, like, if you want to watch people stream video games, why don't you just go to Twitch and watch people stream video games? Like, why would you?
Well, they were never about streaming video games.
Yeah, that's but the that's thing. What they were, they're doing
they were
now.
Always about. Yeah, that's so weird because like their success was like, hey, we're like, you know, we're bleeding edge. We're going to tell you about like the stuff that's coming out next month. And we're going to give, you know, reviews and previews of games that you might not have heard about. And that was like really, really, really cool to have back in the day because I didn't have the internet until I was like 14.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was cool to see like people talking about like E3. I didn't know how to find anything else out about E3 other than, you know, a very select handful of video game websites that existed at the time. But they would like give huge in-depth coverages. They'd have interviews with people in the culture. They would do all this great stuff, and it wasn't just limited to games too. Like Attack of the Show would talk about anything. I remember one of my favorite segments was they just hooked up a brand new computer, brand new boot, and they put the IP address for the world to see, and they were like, "Come hack us."
Mm-hmm.
And it was so crazy. Like as the show kept going, like there were more and more icons on screen. People kept changing the wallpaper, so it was crazy. Just by exposing their IP address, they were getting hacked in real time.
Mm.
I used to do cool shit like that, and now they're this.
I'm amazed that Gamergate wasn't blamed for this. It didn't even come up for all the things that can and have been blamed on Gamergate, like, you know, the insurrection. The first domino is Gamergate, and the massive domino at the end is literally everything else. Mm-hmm. But it never came up. It never came up in this. But to some degree, I think Gamergate did contribute to these misandric cunts eventually getting what was coming to them.
I suspect that as well. You know, I don't think it's great when people lose their job, even if I don't like them. Like, you know, but I think like in Frost's case, she's probably gonna be fine, because this is the thing. Like, you know, the gaming industry is essentially like possessed by this kind of progressive woke value system. So if she comes up to them and says, "I got fired, you know, because I'm a woman," they'll probably offer her a job. And I'm sure she's going to be okay. But like, it's still a shame that this happened to, you know, people who probably just really like the industry, and they just really wanted to work in it in some capacity. Like they wanted to be, you know, they wanted to write sketches. They wanted to be producers or set up streams or whatever. And they're all gone because, you know, we have essentially created an allowance for women to be cruel to men who are in the industry that they are supposedly like also a part of and care about. So because there are some men who might say, "Well, I thought Olivia Munn was hot," this gives Frost license to like blow up at them and call them misogynists. And those men apparently aren't putting up with that anymore. And that's actually kind of like the other end of this. Now, you know, I'm not a fan of cancel culture. I think that G4 TV was not acting because people were saying, "You have to get this woman fired." I think they were basically just looking at their bottom line and saying, "This woman is going to cost us more money than she's going to bring in profits. And, you know, we got to let her go." Now, I think that G4 TV is probably doomed, because I don't see, like, they like, just like Mike J said, they don't have anything else to offer. Like what they had before could only have been done before, when they had a team of people and they were doing like all of this sort of like, you know, it was deeper than normal coverage of the gaming industry, because they had like access, because they were, you know, like Mike said, on the bleeding edge or whatever. But today, that's not the case anymore. Like, you can get gaming news anywhere, and there's endless people, like, you know, getting leaks and screenshots and things like that. So like G4 is just not, because the internet is so like open now, that's just not going to be enough. So then what else do you offer? And, you know, this is what I mean, but I think that I don't know, man. Like, they're not going to recover. So firing her isn't really going to matter that much, because G4 is probably doomed to fail regardless, because it's not keeping up with the times. So,
but well, in terms of the gender issue of it, like, this woman did a bunch of female behavior that is typical of toxic women that ends up impacting on men on a regular basis.
Yep.
And the primary one is, oh, you're not going to like me because you're all misogynists, right? Mm-hmm. And that prediction, you're not going to like me because you're bad, is something that women can get away with and men get, you know, mistreated for if they do it. Like, you're not going to like me. And it happens with some types of severely depressed people will do this. You're not going to like me because you're mean, you know. You're not going to like me because you aren't going to look past my this or that failing. And we make comedy out of it when the character doing it is a male character. Like Marvin, the paranoid android, is a prime example. You don't like me because I'm better than you. Yeah. And that's kind of... Right. And it's funny and we make fun of it because, you know, dude, nobody is going to believe that. Right?
Right.
But when women do it, they get to cry misogyny and they get to pretend that they have accurately predicted other people when in reality, all they did was be a bitch to everybody until they didn't like her. Right. All she did was be a bitch to everybody until they didn't like her. And now she's, you know, reaping the benefits because she got fired. But that's the first one. The second one is women have a tendency, toxic women in particular, have a tendency to mouth off. Like, we all mouth off. We never learn not to mouth off because other women don't beat us up for it. They mouth off back at us. That's our way of fighting with each other, is mouthing off at each other.
Yeah.
And when we're growing up, boys are not allowed to hit us for mouthing off at them. Right. They can hit each other. So if some guy comes up and mouths off to you at the park when you're a little kid, you might get into a fist fight.
Mm-hmm.
But if a girl comes along and mouths off to you, you don't get into a fist fight. Right. Because you can't hit her. And you can't win that fight. If you technically win the fight, you lost because you beat up a girl. And if you lose the fight, you lost because you got beat up by a girl. Like, yeah. There's no winning that. So guys just stay out of it. Right. They let them mouth off and let them walk away. So girls don't learn not to mouth off when they're growing up. And, you know, that's why you hear so much from me, right? But they get guys in trouble. And you do learn if you have a brother who defends you. You do learn if you have male friends who defend you and you're observant that you can't mouth off in a way that gets them in trouble. Without, you know, being responsible for whatever happens to them because of what you did. But a lot of women don't learn that either. And clearly, either she didn't learn it or she didn't care that she couldn't mouth off without somebody's echoing.
I'll mute.
Sorry. She couldn't mouth off without getting the people around her fired. Right, she gets people around her fired by making their workplace less lucrative, and their employer had to get rid of some of them. And they didn't get rid of the person that caused the problem; they got rid of the person that you know didn't cause the problem. And those are things that you see all the time with toxic women, that they make these self-fulfilling prophecies. They mistreat the people around them, and then accuse those people of hating them just for being women and not because of their behavior. They mouth off, they get people in trouble, and then they don't know when to stop. Like, she had to have had somebody come along and say, look, you are causing problems that are costing the network money, and we are losing people. People are getting fired because you have caused this problem. And this was her response, was to brag about not being on the cut list. Like, that was stupid. She could have kept her mouth shut, but she didn't. And now she's fired too. Like, that's typical. That is really typical with toxic women, that they'll just continue and continue. And now she's probably going to claim that she was fired because of misogyny. She will not admit to what happened. And chances are, it may even take her a little bit of time to get hired somewhere, because when she publicly starts saying she was fired because of misogyny and this and that, she's going to make it hard for somebody else to hire her.
Yep.
So that's it. Like that's, and I don't feel bad for her. I feel bad for all of the people that were let go because of her. And in particular, I feel bad for the men who were harmed by the fact that a woman decided to engage in all of this toxic behavior.
Yep. But of course, a lot of these men that she worked around were also very, very supportive and encouraging of her sort of anti-male feminist rant, and because they presumed that it does not include them. But
right.
That doesn't matter because, like, everyone's losing their jobs. So, you know, like, or the company is just going to go under because they have no, I mean, they can't go anywhere. Like, this is all just like, we're watching the whole thing go down like the Hindenburg. And there are some people who jumped out of the blimp a week ago. And now there are people that are jumping out of the blimp today, but it's still going down, so it doesn't really matter who stays on the blimp. So, anyway,
a woman never falls off of a pedestal without taking a shitload of people with her.
Yeah, exactly. So there you go. You know, this is just the latest from G4 stuff. Let us know what you guys think about this in the comments section. And in the meantime, we're gonna move on to the next story. But yeah, just give us your thoughts when you're able. So now we're going to be looking at a new Texas law. So a Texas law to stop social media platforms with more than 50 million monthly users from banning people for their viewpoints will now go into effect. The law was put on hold after NetChoice and the Computer and Communications Industry Association sued Texas, arguing that private companies have a First Amendment right to curate content posted on their platforms and decide which types of speech they saw fit to be there. The Fifth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals disagreed. Quote, "Today we reject the idea that corporations have a freewheeling First Amendment right to censor what people say," the ruling said. They also said the ruling forced tech companies to give equal treatment of all manners of speech, which would include scary views outside the Overton window. Quote, "We strongly disagree with the court's decision forcing private companies to give equal treatment to all viewpoints on their platforms places foreign propaganda and extremism on equal footing with decent internet users and places Americans at risk," the CCIA said. "God bless America and death to America are both viewpoints, and it is unwise and unconstitutional for the state of Texas to compel a private business to treat those the same," end quote.
I can see the point here, the points on both sides. The First Amendment clearly states Congress shall make no law, etc. It doesn't say private distributors should make no rule or terms of service, etc. It doesn't apply to private companies, and arguably it shouldn't. This is what Sam Harris was trying to talk about in his now infamous interview with Trigonometry, in which he said all the quiet parts out loud. Private companies shouldn't be compelled to keep anyone on board, but nor should they be compelled to yeet anyone by the government, which is what Harris forgot to say. So this is, right, I guess it's in the spirit of the First Amendment, but not the word, which seems to be the wrong way around, if anything. What it should really concern is the possibility that the government itself ever does indeed have a hand in influencing the content presented in any given social media platform. There was a guy recently who got banned from Twitter for saying something about COVID or something about the clot shots that Twitter wouldn't let him say, and they banned him, and he took Twitter to court and he won his case, so they let him back on the platform. I can't remember his name. Anyone? It's Mark something.
I'm sorry, no. But that sounds like
I don't remember exactly.
But yeah, he went on to reveal that some of this had something to do with government influence. And he said so in a tweet, and Elon Musk responded going, "That's interesting. Can you elaborate?" Mm-hmm. And he was like, "No, I can't. I'm afraid I'm not allowed to elaborate any further. And perhaps what we're seeing there is just the tip of the iceberg. Maybe the government, and by that I almost certainly mean the Democrat Party, is indeed involved in swaying the narrative on sites like Twitter and TikTok.
That's actually been confirmed.
Yeah, there's a clip doing the rounds at the moment of a guy on TikTok revealing that he was essentially bribed by the quote-unquote Good Info Foundation, bribed to the tune of $400.
Oh, no, it's worse than that. When the laptop from hell, when Hunter Biden's laptop from hell came out, there were FBI emails to Facebook. The FBI had Zuckerberg's phone number, and there were conversations. They were asking that to be suppressed. And the same thing has happened with Twitter. So it's been confirmed. There's been multiple outlets that have reported on this. It's been confirmed that the Biden administration was in communication with at least both Facebook and Twitter. And if they were in communication with those two, they're in communication with all of the social networks that are interconnected with each other. And you know which ones those are, because they are the ones that all banned Alex Jones at the same time. They're the ones that all banned, I can't think of his name, the one Andrew, leader of the Proud Boys that they all banned.
Enrique Tarrio, Andrew
Right,
Gates.
He was... Right. And all those guys, right? All at the same time. So that's happening. We do have the federal government engaging with social media administrators and telling them narratives to suppress and narratives to promote and information to suppress and so on. And they're doing it to facilitate things that the government is doing that they don't want people objecting to. So yeah. That's happening. That's not a myth. And yeah. As far as the what the court's doing, this probably wouldn't be happening if the cake lawsuits hadn't happened, because the cake lawsuits essentially have been an attack by progressives, by the woke, on private businesses. And the difference is, they're not just telling the cake creators, they're not just telling the bakers, you have to host this speech. They're actually compelling them to speak it by writing it on a cake. Whereas, the social media companies aren't speaking it. They're simply opening a platform and hosting it. And hosting it's not really the same as speaking it. So there's a little bit of wiggle room there. The First Amendment does give you the right to speak. It doesn't give you the right to shut people up. So it becomes a question if you can compel a cake decorator to write a sentence on a cake that he feels is morally repugnant, then why would you not be able to also compel a media platform to refrain from censoring speech that they find morally repugnant?
Yeah,
you can't have it both ways.
I want to talk more about this TikTok guy, as I was talking about, because I know some of you have seen it. This guy who was bribed to do a video about January the 6th, specifying exactly how he should refer to the incident. He had to call it a criminal conspiracy and a committed crime, and that Trump Republicans were responsible, and he must frame it as an attack on America. Make clear that it's an ongoing and unresolved issue, and specifically to affect people's votes in the midterms. And I don't know if this Good Info Foundation is affiliated with the Democrat Party, and in the event that it is, we're unlikely to know about it, because the Democrats are very good at keeping these shady deals in the dark, perhaps on pain of getting someone whacked if they speak out. Point is, that is what should be stamped out first and foremost. Private companies, to some degree, should be allowed to have a political agenda, but if government entities are pulling their strings behind closed doors, people deserve to know about it. If it's not already illegal, then it bloody well should be. And if any sort of state or federal legislation needs to be made, it's one that gives some transparency into letting people know when and where and how it's going on. The only way the government should be interfering is in the pursuit of making sure the government does not interfere. As paradoxical as that sounds, it's a libertarian thing.
Mm-hmm.
The idea of a libertarian government is itself kind of a contradiction in terms, but that was always supposed to be what was different about the American government, an authority whose only resolve is to curtail authoritarianism. I guess it's no wonder that it can be corrupted through this paradox, but it doesn't have to be. Or maybe it does. Maybe it's inevitable. Maybe burn the whole thing
down.
What
was the name of that foundation?
Don't even rebuild it.
What was the name of that foundation?
The Good Info Foundation.
Yeah, I
think
saw
it was
that.
Headed up by an Obama guy.
I think it was, and because I heard about that story earlier today. Well, here's the thing too. Like, I think that the problem with this, you know, like back and forth about like the free speech thing being a government thing, is that there are many ways that the state can work around that and still get what they want. So this is like the reason why we have to like at least have a different kind of conversation around this. Now, what would be ideal is that American citizens valued free speech. Not that we have to like go right to the First Amendment and then go to the letter of the First Amendment and translate that and fight with that. That what would be ideal is that American citizens, and not just American citizens, all peoples, right, had a love for free speech, like as a principle, like they believe in it as a principle. It doesn't need to be written somewhere, you know. But the problem I think that we're dealing with is that there seems to be a lot of gray area between when it's the state and when it's a private company. And this is like the problem we're facing, because like, you know, a private company is like, how private is a private company if the government is giving them money, making donations, or they're involved in some way financially, right? Or how private is a private company if the FBI is going to call you at your home and say, we need you to do something for us? Like, is it still, because technically, and this is what, you know, the pro-censorship people would say, technically they are choosing to do this as a private entity, but there is a degree of nudging or even coercion that's going on, which is coming from the state. So, and again, we're not allowed to even acknowledge that and say, wait a minute, is this still like, is this still a case of the First Amendment? Because there are people like that are exploiting the loopholes or like the gray areas, right? And it's hurting, you know, like it's hurting the speech, it's hurting us. So I don't know that Texas is crossing a line, but I'd have to look at the actual language of their policy. But maybe, you know, there is a case being made for, number one, like if the FBI is involved with social media, it's not a private company, or something along those lines, right? If they're getting money, and we already know they are, by the way, we already know that like social media companies like Facebook, Twitter, Google, you know, and YouTube, they're getting money from the government. Like there is an incestuous relationship there, because they're trying to take control of all of the narratives. And they know that what, you know, most people who are trying to find out what's happening in the world with COVID, with vaccines, with Ukraine, with Russia, with whatever, they're going to go on social media. And of course, all of the news they're going to get is catered and it's controlled. You know, they're not going to find like, you know, interviews with various people who have been detained after January 6th, who are basically being unjustly held in, you know, in prisons like they're terrorists. We're not going to learn about that because they're not going to put that out there. They're going to you have to go to alternative media to learn this stuff. So it's not like those places have, like, I don't know if I would call it freedom of speech, but like access to information. They're only going to get a kind of controlled version of it. So I think that unfortunately, I think that the conversation around social media and its control over information, I think that only is going to become more heated as time goes on. And I don't know that the it's a private company argument is going to hold up for much longer, because if you're in bed with these people, like, I don't know, like, is that, can that still be considered a private company?
Well, that's the thing. It's not the action of a private company if it's done in collusion with actual government officials.
Right.
Like, it's borderline that it's done with former government officials because they're not in government anymore, right? But it's done in collusion with actual government officials. They're engaging in government censorship, government-directed censorship. And if they're also receiving government funding, then it's arguable that the reason that they're engaging in government-directed censorship is because they're under pressure to do so as a result of their funding, that they, you know, they, if they don't do it, they're going to lose their funding, or the threat is at least there. And the head of state here in the U.S. has used the threat of withholding or withdrawing government funding to pressure entities to do what he wanted in the past. It's made news. That's what he did in Ukraine. And if he did it to the government of a country, why would we assume that he wouldn't do it to a corporation that is centered in the United States? Right. You also have the fact that, you know, our government is currently increasing the power of the scariest agency that it has, the IRS, and nobody can go after a corporation like the IRS. They can go after every individual, and they can go after the company. They can go after the shareholders. So, you know, I mean, it's a minor amount of government pressure for in comparison to what the government can do is still an incredibly heavy pressure. And there's just no comparison to anything else. Like, even you know, mafia insurance scams pale in comparison to this. Like, so much that you wouldn't even be able to see them in the comparison. You know, going back to the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy comparisons, it's that comparison when you go into the machine that shows you your position in the universe. All other pressure campaigns pale in that much in comparison to one from the United States government.
Yeah.
If you are a United States citizen or United States company that is subject to United States law, that's terrifying, right? So you can't even say for sure whether these companies are complicit or not, because how would you know? Like, they might play complicit in order to avoid being offed or gone after by the IRS, you know, or having any of their regulated areas attacked by the people in charge of, you know, looking at those areas. Anytime a government agency comes in and examines your company for a violation of any kind of policy or law that it's subject to, they can find a violation whether there is one or not. And they will find at least one every time. It's a rare thing for a company to be found completely clean. And you know, I mean, I've even seen that down to local agencies going into, you know, food places, right?
Sure.
And you just don't piss them off. So, yeah, I can see the court looking at this going, no, these people can't do this. Can't do this. You can't censor politically, especially since it has come out that you're doing it at the behest of the government. And especially since, you know, you have people on your side of the political fence continually going after this bakery until they bankrupted them over whether or not they're willing to write a sentence on a cake that that you want them to write that they find morally repugnant. So, you know, just in my opinion, it's really hard for the left to argue that it's a free speech violation to tell Twitter that they can't delete your speech if they're also arguing that they are able to tell a baker that he's not allowed to refuse to speak your words.
Right, right. All right, so that's a strong case. I'd like to hear your thoughts on that. So just like, you know, leave us a comment, let us know what you think about this. I mean, again, as long as the argumentation is sound, this could set a kind of precedent, because one of the biggest struggles that a lot of people on alternative media have is getting exposure. And we are among those people. Like, we want, you know, we want more open discussion on men. I never felt as though this discussion needed to be a partisan one, but it is being made into a partisan one. We are the enemy. And I have my suspicions as to why that is, because I think that if you essentially like help men and put them in a position where they can like seek their own way, they probably won't side with these people. So I think that's part of it. But nonetheless, these kinds of things should be available to everyone. And because you never know, I could learn something that completely contradicts what I thought and then change my mind on it. So I think that, you know, you have to constantly be open to that. Anyway, let us know what you guys think about this in the comments. All right, next up is a short update. But first, Meredith Chi gives us $5 and says, Fifth Circuit Court ruling says demonetizing, shadow banning, removing content, and banning is not speech. It also said actions are not protected by 230. Well, thank you for that, Meredith. Like I said, hopefully more states will follow suit. I mean, if you can't, and look, I'd almost prefer that the states do these things and not like the Fed. I don't want the Fed to have more influence over people. I think it's better this way. So
This will probably be taken to the Supreme Court. But if the Supreme Court upholds it, then every state will be able to pass laws like this, and it'll pretty much hamstring the ability to censor at least political speech on any social media.
Right.
Which, honestly, if it wasn't for the fact that these corporations are also using a network, a controlling network, in regard to financial engagement between other companies to shut out anybody who doesn't censor speech politically,
right,
I might feel a little differently about this. But they're not. They're not withholding or not refraining from that. They're doing both. They're saying, well, we're going to censor and you can't go someplace else.
Right.
Which is kind of skirting, if not outright violating, monopoly laws, even though they're not doing it alone.
Right. Okay, then. Let us know what you guys think about this one in the comments. Now we're going to move on to the next story. Just a short little update. I had originally made this a full story, but then I noticed that it's like we have reported this before, but at the time that we reported it, it hadn't gone through. Like, we didn't know if it was going to go through or not. Although I think that we were all pretty much under the presumption that it would, because this is almost like a return to, you know, like the status quo before Trump was president. He like did some good stuff for it. So,
yeah, it was an Obama era, an Obama era thing that Trump's Secretary of Education undid. So,
yeah, exactly. So, essentially, the students, and by students, they mean men, who have been accused of sexual assault on campus, they're going to lose their protections. The new rules governing Title IX in colleges and universities are due to become final, and even for some on the left, the rules go too far. The state of Ohio school board urged individual schools not to follow the new guidance because it gave transgender boys the opportunity to compete as girls. So that's not really the important part. But there's also a new rule governing sexual assault in colleges and universities. Donald Trump's Secretary of Education, Betsy DeVos, wrote new rules that overturned the draconian, un-American rules on sexual assault that first came out under Barack Obama that denied the accused any semblance of due process and put a thumb on the scale that virtually guaranteed that a male student could be considered guilty, essentially have his life destroyed. Always Believe the Woman became a nightmare that derailed the careers of many male students. DeVos changed that, but now Biden has reversed the DeVos rules and return colleges to the standard of, I think it's like preponderance of evidence standard.
Mm-hmm.
And
there's a bunch of things that she changed. She had gone, basically, a university, if they used a preponderance of evidence standard, they also had to use that standard when one of their administrators was accused. There were a lot of universities that had different standards depending on whether the accuser targeted a student or an administrator or a professor and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They also had to follow some other rules of due process. If mm-hmm. the accuser is allowed an advocate, the accused has to also be allowed an advocate. The accuser can't be exempt from being questioned, even if they have a process for protecting the accuser's sensibilities. They still have to allow the accused a right to question the accuser in some way or another. They're not allowed to exclude potentially exculpatory evidence. The accused has to be given a defined explanation of what he or she is accused of. And all those were things that universities were not doing. So there was all that. But, the Obama administration had created an environment in which you could basically just point the finger at some guy and say, you know, he was sexually harassing you by one action taken in the classroom one time that you couldn't prove he did, and actually get him expelled and his, you know, funding yanked and all kinds of things. And what DeVos changed was harassment had to be defined the way harassment is defined legally, which means a pattern of behavior. It had, you know, you had to have a much more harsh definition of what kind of behavior is defined as harassment. Mm-hmm. And so on. Right. So this change basically erases all of that. And it's something that we had predicted. This is actually going to go through. He said he's going to do it, and he's going to do it. And I know there were people that were doubtful that he was actually going to do this when he got in. Well, here it is.
Mm-hmm.
So you can expect a lot of lawsuits in the future because of this.
Yeah. Yeah. So basically, this is a big old I told you so. And I think you guys probably suspected this anyways. But just thought I would do a quick follow up on that. I'm not going to read the rest of the article. I think we get it. So if anybody else has any thoughts on this.
One more thing. It's going to be interesting to see what happens with the Ohio law that is in direct conflict with this in regard to the due process requirements that it laid out.
Mm. Yeah, that would be interesting. All right. So let us know what you guys think about this one in the comments. I'm going to move on to the next one now. This is a good news story. I mean, you know, these things shouldn't happen, but when they do and we can like sort of catch them, I think that's good. So, all right, Mike.
Hand it off to me, Brent.
Yeah, I did. Yes.
Oh, I didn't. I might have coughed for a second there.
Oh,
all right. So the Los Angeles Regional Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force working in concert with dozens of other agencies, has arrested over 100 people involved in the manufacture and distribution or possession of child using tips gathered from the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, law enforcement was able to identify over 650 targets. Suspects were not just limited to the scope of child offenses, but also sexual abuse, pimping, and rape. Two of the suspects were a Cedars-Sinai Medical Center pediatrician who was allegedly in possession of over 600 sexually explicit pictures featuring children, and a San Bernardino County Sheriff's Deputy.
Wow. That's like
some LAPD.
Wood chipper. Wood chip. Sorry.
Two wood chippers. LAPD Captain Jeff Bratcher spoke about the success of Los Angeles' Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force, stating, quote, "In 2019, the number of cyber tips rose to 8,500. In 2020, 2021, both years, were over 24,000, end quote. He would eventually continue to say that he estimates that there will be over 36,000 cyber tips received by the end of 2022. The LAPD urges parents to monitor their children's use of the internet, stating, quote, "Parents are used to seeing children with an electronic device in their hands. Most of the time, this enriches children's lives. However, parents and caregivers have to know that there can be danger awaiting their children on the internet." End quote.
I wonder at what point we can take exception to the idea that these electronic devices enrich children's lives. I would also take exception to any unnecessary fear-mongering about the dangers they represent. For as long as anyone can remember, we've been drilling this lesson into children: don't talk to strangers. Since long before the internet existed, this lesson has been important. That's why it's been taught. And surely the same lesson applies when it comes to the internet. By all means, watch YouTube videos about things that interest you or entertain you, or perhaps even educate you. That's one of the coolest things about the internet. You can find content creators that can teach you about things in ways far more engaging than most teachers can. You can't choose your teachers, but you can choose your YouTubers. But the caveat should be made. Don't go to chat rooms. Don't talk to strangers in chat rooms. And if a stranger in a chat room asks you to meet up with them in real life, get the fuck out of the chat room and never come back. If they understand the notion of stranger danger, they can extend it to that context, I think. If not, then all the lessons about stranger danger were always moot and pointless. Fuck the term strangers, by the way. Kids these days know the word pedophile. They know what it means. They use it as an insult all the time. They find it hilarious. They have ever since the 90s. Might as well call a spade at this point. But as to my initial point, the enrichment that comes from having access to the internet is something that most kids don't even need. Children are busy being fascinated with, you know, the real world. They'd much rather find a worm in real life and poke it to see what it does than look up the Wikipedia page on worms. And that's good. Children are good little scientists like that. They'd rather make observations and perform experiments than just sit down and listen to what someone else has to say about them. And they should thrive in that world as much as they can before they become old and jaded. I say most children, because there are some exceptions, albeit perhaps rare exceptions. Lord knows I was one of them. When I was at school, I'd spend every spare moment and every spare break time sat on a bench by myself, bored out of my mind, staring into space and hating myself and resenting having to be surrounded by children, because I hate children, and I always have. If I had an electronic device, like a smartphone, offering me all the information in the world, it would have solved all that. In my case, it wouldn't have replaced an otherwise healthy fascination with the real world, it would have given me an excuse to sit there like a zombie and actually absorb information rather than sit there like a zombie and just hate everything. But yeah, I'm weird. I was a weird kid. I was an introverted kid, if you want a less self-deprecatory explanation.
I think many of us were.
Yeah, introversion is not as common in children as it is in jaded adults, but it is a thing. If your kid is weird and introverted like I was, maybe you can let them have a smartphone. But if they're just a normal kid, then maybe not. Maybe a kid who would otherwise be fascinated with the real world and the other kids around them, they would not be enriched by an electronic device. They might actually be mentally impoverished by it. What are we talking about? Oh, yeah, kiddie fitness.
Well, here's the thing. here's the thing. That last statement in this article, right, that's probably about a specific thing. And there's been a number of social networks for kids, which is a bad idea, that have been created, and they're usually based around some kid's game or some other theme that is supposed to lure adults into a sense of comfort that their kid is in a safe space for children. It's labeled for children. It's supposed to be moderated and so on. And there's a certain type of environment that's created there in which the kid is allowed to assume that anybody that he or she is talking to is another kid. And it's been demonstrated repeatedly on several platforms that that's not the case, that these are dangerous environments because the moderators cannot keep up with how many predators show up, pretend to be kids, get kids into conversations, get them into off-site discussions, and then find a way to blackmail them or create a way to blackmail them. And then they start getting them to send illicit images of themselves. And that pattern has been around for a long time. This isn't something that just started in the last few years. It's something that law enforcement is finally... That was a Freudian slip, law enforcement. but they're finally starting to catch up with it. After years and years and years of pedo hunters online highlighting this. And the bad thing about that is there's no due process with those guys, right? You don't have a right to freedom from self-incrimination with those guys. You might end up incriminated even if you hadn't been engaged in any illicit activity before they approached you. And so on. Like, those guys are not the best way for us to catch predators. And the other thing is, they only target males that they think are predators. And there is a significant body among predators that target children that are female. And in fact, women are more likely to be successful because kids are taught to trust them, right? So they get trusted. They get an in easier with your kids. But because this exists, this kind of thing exists, like, you can't just give your kid a device and not monitor. And what I really don't get is that the parents who will monitor their child's use of television, and they'll monitor which video games their child plays. They'll look for ratings and so on in the spectrum of video games. And, well, this isn't for kids under 13. This is for kids under 13 and so on. And they'll trust those things. They'll monitor all that. They'll watch or listen to things that their kids are watching and listening to on radio, on their music platforms, all that stuff, right? And then they'll completely ignore totally, completely ignore their internet use. What the fuck is wrong with you? Like, do you send your kid downtown in the middle of a big city to go do the shopping that they want to do or to go play at a park without a parent? Like, are you serious? Because you are sending your child into the biggest downtown area of any city anywhere in the world when you send them out onto the internet. Right? You should be monitoring what your child is doing. It's your responsibility. That's what parents do. And the idea that you can just put your kid in front of a phone or a laptop or a tablet or let them have access through their game console and they're safe because it says it's for kids, that's bullshit. You have to understand there are adults who will masquerade as children, who will prey on your children if you do not monitor what they are doing and who they are talking to. And yes, you also teach them stranger danger. You also teach them if you're on site X that is for children, that the discussion is supposed to be about building things with Legos and somebody wants you to go to an IRC chat, you don't go and you tell mommy or daddy. That's important. But you should also be able to see the screen they're using at all times.
Mm-hmm.
There is no children's right to privacy and communications, especially not on the internet. And as long as you're not being stupid and, interfering in your kids having fun with their friends, your kids should feel comfortable knowing that mom or dad can see if somebody does or says something that they're, that puts them in danger, that they're going to be in danger from, right?
Yeah.
So that's it. You can't put this all on the cops, right? It's important that the cops do this. It's really disturbing that the FBI just deprioritized going after sex abusers that go after they've just basically communicated to the agents that child sex abuse investigations were no longer an FBI priority because they wanted to manufacture more domestic violent extremism cases, and they're pressuring agents to label cases as domestic violent extremism even when it's not, even when they don't meet the criteria, and they're pressuring agents to come up with more January 6 cases, basically, or more information to use in January 6 cases. So they're taking away from going after people like the folks that were targeted in this investigation in order to go after people who did nothing wrong and possibly not even anything stupid. Little ladies that just took a video of themselves in between walking in between the ropes in the White House or something. That's more important than protecting your children. So it is up to you. You don't have any backup at all. Like, this is a good story, and I'm glad this happened. Hopefully everyone involved receives their due process rights so that the people who are ultimately penalized for this are the guilty ones, and any innocent people that got caught up in this investigation don't get wrongfully prosecuted. But it is good that they are catching these people. And it's good that it's a police investigation that's catching them, because at least it gives us a chance that there won't be somebody that was entrapped or falsely presented as something they're not that ends up getting penalized. It doesn't necessarily mean a guarantee, but at least there's a chance. And I hope maybe we can extend this back to the FBI and get them back on this as well, because a lot of this stuff crosses state lines and national borders. In fact, a significant amount of it crosses international borders.
Mm-hmm. The other thing I wanted to add too is that it's not enough to simply monitor, like, you know, take a look at your child's tablet, laptop, or phone, and make sure that what's on the screen appears to be child-friendly. Obviously, there are a number of different, like, controls you can put in place so that children don't, like, randomly end up in an inappropriate website, which is, I think, fairly easy to do, even if you're not trying. But there's a lot of programming, for example, on YouTube that appears to be child-friendly, and it has, like, the, you know, it has all of the, I guess you could say, like, the signals that it's child-friendly, like pastel or bright colors and, like, cartoony images and, you know, easy to remember music. Yeah, so, but it could end up being queer kids stuff. And the thing is,
there's some really weird stuff that's, yeah, like, I know, the queer kid stuff was bad, but there's one where it looks like they're just doing cake decoration, but then if you listen to the actual verbal part of it that's being said, it sounds like a teenage girl's voice talking about things like being kidnapped and almost killed and raped and all kinds of stuff.
Right.
And so you would have no idea if your kid has headphones on.
Yeah, exactly. So that's what I'm saying. Like, you got to be more than a little involved. You have to know exactly what they're watching. You have to know exactly what it's showing. So, like, even like, aside from those really surreal videos, which I was going to bring up, because again, they could probably look like, oh, it's just, you know, it's just kids programming. But you should listen to it yourself. You should watch it yourself. You should see, is this appropriate? And, you know, because again, a lot of the, especially the people that are sort of like the gender abolitionist, let's say, activist types that create content, even if the content isn't aimed at children, it all has a very, like, childish appearance. So it looks like something that's for kids, right? And, you know, they might wear ridiculous costumes. I mean, they may not exactly be drag queens, but, like, sometimes the lines are very blurry. Like, they, you know, like, oh, I'm a unicorn, but it looks like a drag queen, you know, kind of a thing. You know, and as parents, I'm just saying you should know what those kids are watching, because I do think that there is, like, this some of this predatory stuff that happens is because the children think that they're essentially, like, making friends with, you know, these the people that are parts of these children's programs. And, you know, like, I always wanted to meet the Romper Room lady when I was little. Right. So it's kind of, like, easy to get sucked into that. And it does happen a lot with women. This is another thing, too, is that, you know, we're always worried about the men, but it's really, like, there are a lot of predatory women, and we have this problem of not seeing them as potential threats to children. So, but they are, just like men. They all fit into the wood chipper the same way, is what I'm saying. So,
well, and, you know, there's always the other thing, age appropriateness. Your child should not be on the internet, like, just using it before they're in elementary school. You can watch stuff from, you know, like, YouTube with your kid without them being the controlling party that does, you know, the clicking and searching and stuff. But you shouldn't be putting your kid online when they're little like that. It should be something that maybe you guys do together. Just like you shouldn't sit your baby in front of the television to watch Teletubbies and you know, in a playpen and leave the room. You shouldn't have your kids just watching stuff. That's not a substitute for parental interaction. And if you don't interact with them and read to them and play with them and be their sort of their primary engagement when they're little like that, you actually set back their learning of ordinary things like how to communicate with other people. You have to make sure your child crawls or their ability to learn to read is negatively affected. There's a lot of strange things that are really important that you don't think about. But internet use is one of them that you just cannot take lightly. It's bigger. It's almost like letting your child play with a Ouija board if you believe that Ouija boards can do everything that people believe they can do.
Mm-hmm. All right, so let us know what you guys think about this one in the comments. I forgot to look and see if there's any super chows. I feel like there's probably a lot.
There's at least one or two.
Yeah, I'm going to look right now. So I do have some. And, you know, Allison has this thing where she told me that after we read these, we should put the word done, but she never does it. So, I mean, I'm the one that has to do it, but I'm just going to read today's, and I'm sorry.
Which means if you pay for a super chow, it might get read twice.
It might, exactly.
You might get double for your money.
Yeah. So I got Tip sends us $10 and says tip. So thank you, Tip, for the tip. Tiny Giraffe gives us $15, $50. Thank you, Tiny Giraffe. Appreciate it. And then Xerinx gives us $5 and says, my position is least amount of harm, so companies operating within the U.S. must do so in line with our Constitution. All right. Again, ideally, we should already value that principle, and it should be, like, embedded in our culture. Because if we don't value that principle as a society, it's kind of meaningless to have. I mean, like there are people that are anti-free speech that are saying you don't have a right to something you're not willing to use force to protect, right? And essentially, they're saying there is no freedom of speech unless you fight me. And of course, like the purpose is that people would simply say, well, of course you have freedom of speech. This is what we believe here. But they're not like that. And it should be a value, but I take your point nonetheless, because it kind of isn't right now.
Well, it's why some people say that the Second Amendment exists in part to protect the First Amendment.
Yeah. Okay. So we're going to move on to the final story now, guys. Let us know what you guys think about this one in the comments. And now we're going to end off on something good. I think this is a good thing. A big win. So, you know, something a little more positive. So, Mike J., if you could.
Well, certainly, Brian. And yes, this is definitely a good one. This is on many levels good. But it's going to take a little bit of an explanation. We gotta take you back. Take you back to the year 2016, November 9th. Oberlin, Ohio, at the historic Gibson's Bakery. A business that has been a fixture of the community for over 130 years. Not many businesses can say that.
That sounds like racism to me.
Not in the new world, no. we got 1,000-year-old pubs over here, but yeah, I get your point.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
So, at said bakery, an incident occurred. A black student who was underage and carrying a fake ID attempted to purchase a bottle of wine from the store. As the store clerk was rejecting the purchase due to the student's fake ID, he noticed two other students concealing wine bottles in their clothing. When the clerk announced that he was contacting the police, the students turned hostile and assaulted him. Police eventually arrived and found the three students continuing their brutal assault against the store clerk, who at this point was on the ground. All three students were charged with assault, and one was charged with shoplifting. Nearly a year later, in August of 2017, all three students entered guilty pleas and admitted that the store clerk was in the right and that there was no racial motivations to the clerk's actions. All three students agreed to a no-jail-time plea in exchange for pleading guilty, restitution, a public apology, and a promise for good future behavior. But in between all this, in between the incidents and the eventual conclusion of the case, there was a whole new saga unfolding. The day directly after the students were arrested, hundreds gathered at the park across from the bakery in protest. The protesters were students from the local school, Oberlin College, and they had heard of the arrest the day previous. They allege that the business racially profiled the students and that the store clerk used excessive force with the students despite him being the victim of the assault. Oberlin College gleefully fanned the flames of hate against the bakery. Oberlin Student Senate passed a resolution condemning the bakery. University funds were used to provide support for the student protesters. Officials at the college also demanded the school's food providers stop buying from the bakery. The university's dean of students even passed out flyers at the protest stating that the bakery was, quote, a racist establishment with a long account of racial profiling and discrimination, end quote. By November of 2017, Gibson's Bakery filed a libel suit against Oberlin College. Gibson's also alleged that the college slandered them, interfered with business relationships, and broke contract with them. Eventually, in June of 2019, the jury found in favor of Gibson's Bakery. The college unsuccessfully appealed on October of 2019, eventually appealing the case all the way to the 9th Ohio District Court of Appeals, where they were also shut down. Eventually, on September 8th, 2022, Oberlin College released a statement that they would not be pursuing the case anymore legally and would pay Gibson's Bakery the $36.6 million judgment awarded to the bakery by the courts.
To bring up a reference that came up earlier, we've come a long way since Bake the Cake Bigger.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I could only assume that the guy who ran the bakery that had to fight those people, he got a plus one to damage for being white, plus 1d6 against black folks. So maybe that's why they're considering him the assaulter. This is white privilege bonuses.
There you go. The thing about this that's good is obviously when you attack somebody's business and you make false claims about their business model, and you make false claims about how the employees act and everything, and it impacts their ability to do business in the community, and it makes somebody out to have done something reprehensible, and you lie, that's bad. But when it's another business doing it, when it's, because a university is a for-profit business, they may claim that they're not for-profit, but they take in shitloads of money, and it's a for-profit business that makes a shitload of money from the government, you now have the government funding slander, and they're directing students that they're supposed to be influencing to be better people, to be future employees, future business owners, and so on in the community or in other communities. They're influencing them to lie against, this business. They're influencing them to use false allegations as a form of political attack. And to have them smacked down this big and have that business supported in their fight to clear their name, and everything, that actually is huge. Especially when it has happened in the current environment, where allegations of not being woke enough or being racist, being sexist, being in any way, shape, or form intolerant of people you're not allowed to be intolerant of, like those are used to cancel people all the time now. Mm-hmm. So it's good that they got smacked down for that.
Yeah, and it gives me some, optimism that the courts are not completely like swallowed up by all this trash, and that it should be obvious, like kids break the law, a man tries to stop them, it turns into an assault, the police show up, they can see what's happened, but like the funny thing is that. That the kids knew they could do this to begin with. You know, like they knew that they could, and they did. They took it further, right? They knew that even though they were clearly in the wrong and they were just shoplifting and then assaulting a guy, they in their mind, they're like, well, I can always say this is racism. Like, where do they get that from? And I know where it comes from. It comes from the college. They enabled it.
Yep.
They made it into a thing, right? He went to them, and or they went to them. Maybe they had like a history teacher or some other woke professor, and they told him, and he basically just swallowed whatever they were saying. He was like, well, the bakery has been around for 100 years, and that was white. Being around for 100 years is pretty damn white, and the only more white it can get if it's a pub that's 1,000 years old in England. But so they were able to use this as a weapon, and they knew that it would work, and they were willing to do it. And so I think they got it from school, but it might not be the only place. I mean, you know, if you're a minority today and you're a young person and you're in school, you're learning about these, systems of oppression that keep you down. But it's also in the music you listen to. It's in the TV that you watch. It's in the films that you watch. It's on the news. I mean, it's everywhere. It's everywhere. And it's nonstop, because the purpose of it is to make these children resentful of the world they live in, of their own lives. And so they're going to do that, you know, and even their parents encourage this shit. Like in many cases, like the, you know, especially if you're like living in a, like if you're a black kid growing up in a black area with under a single mom, she's always looking to pass the buck to someone else. And so he may learn it from her. I mean, I'm sure that it happens. Like, there was a film that came out in theaters just this past weekend called The Woman King. And it's about, it claims to be a historically, like, you know, a film based on historical events about this tribe in, I think, Western Africa called the Dahomey. And the movie makes it look like Black Panther 2. Like, it's just, you know, it's about a bunch of strong Amazonian black women that are fighting against the evil white oppressors to, you know, liberate their people and all of this other shit. But when you look up, and anybody can do this, when you look up the actual tribe, like online, to learn more, because you might be curious, you might, oh, this is interesting, right? You find out that they were slave owners and they were fighting against people who were trying to free the slaves. You know, it was the French that were basically going everywhere and freeing people. And the movie doesn't appear to say anything about that. And of course, you would think, OK, well, they're going to lie because this is how it works, right? You would think that then, like, people interested would look it up and they would say, oh, this movie's lying to me. Like, you know, clearly this wasn't how it was. Clearly, like, slavery did not know color. It was basically just everywhere at the time. And this is a complete distortion of the narrative. And the what I'm getting at, though, is that the movie was number one this weekend. That means enough people watched it, regardless of any of the facts about what it's really about, and they're okay with it. Because they have enough resentment, right? I think. And it might be that they were just lazy and didn't look it up. But I don't think that that makes a lot of sense, because it's very easy to look up. It's very, like, Wikipedia doesn't even lie about this right now. So, you know, it wouldn't be hard.
Yeah, that's pretty damn easy to look up then.
Yeah. And also, it's kind of like, even blacks that make videos, they were all over the internet saying, you know, this is messed up, because we're essentially rewriting history to make the bad guys who were pro-slavery look like the good guys, just so that we can give it to the white guys in the movie, even though the white guys were the people trying to free the slaves. And this is like how pernicious this narrative of resentment is. Like, you can literally lie to people about something that has historical like documentation written about it, and people will ignore the history because they want to believe the fantasy. And they want to believe the fantasy because of all of their resentment. And so this is, you know, so like taking it back to this story here, why would it then not make sense that a young black man who tried to, you know, steal from a bakery would feel entitled enough to allege that these people are racist because they didn't let him steal from them as some kind of like reparations thing, right? And I think that like this resentment needs to be talked about more because it's clearly not based in reality, but there is like it's going to create more problems, and there are too many people from this group that are okay with this because they also have a tremendous amount of resentment. And I mean resentment towards whites, but not exclusively. It's almost towards everyone, because they want to be the biggest victims. So, and that's kind of like what I found, like, you know, kind of disgusting about this whole thing, because if he had been treated as a victim, which I bet his teachers and his classmates did, then it only gives him enough validation to do something like this again and maybe worse. And I think that stuff happens like this very frequently. Like there was that guy who drove into a crowd at a Christmas parade and he was basically saying, yeah, I want to kill white people. And like nobody, you know, save for a few, nobody talked about it. They were just like, well, that's messed up. And nobody's like, why is this? Why are we so quiet on this? Why aren't more people upset, like, you know, about this? So, and I think it's because people are afraid of being called racist themselves. Like, they're so afraid of being called racist, they didn't even want to talk about, like, anything that has a racial component, even if we don't want to acknowledge it. Because we're afraid. We're afraid of the label. And it's funny because you can only be afraid of the label of racist if you are not racist. Like, that's why you're afraid of the label. So it doesn't add up. But again, it's a tool. It's a tool of control. And this kid was trying to use it. So anyway, at the end of the day, I'm glad that the courts were fair and objective, because I know these allegations can really cloud people's judgment and make them anxious and nervous. And you just got to stay like focused on the path of what is true. And that's it. And don't worry about how offended people get over it. Don't let them control you, because there is a lot of rhetoric that exists specifically so that some people can avoid responsibility for their actions. And it's, and you know, this is, we all know this is true of women, because that's mainly what we talk about here, but it can be broadened to other things, right? So
Yeah, it's hi, I'm back. I don't know when I cut out, but it's ironic how often women and racial minorities talk about victim blaming. Did I get that far in my rant before I was cut off?
Oh, I didn't know that you were cut off, Mike. I didn't even hear the beginning. So.
Oh, right. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. In case I didn't bring it up before, to bring up a reference that came up earlier, we've come a long way since Bake the Cake, Bigot. Because I know Hannah mentioned that a few times earlier.
Well, and it's got to remember, because people tried to make it Bake the Cake. It wasn't Bake the Cake. It was write the sentence on the cake, because the baker offered to bake the cake. Yeah. So it was even, we should never say bake the cake, because bake the cake was not the issue. It was write the sentence on the cake. And it's important that we keep that in mind.
Yeah. And in the meantime, this was give alcohol to the kids or we'll beat the shit out of you and drag you through the mud for 6 years. It's break the law or else we'll break the law, and then we'll break the law again even harder, bigger. So is it any wonder that the law itself is so broken? But at least it's not unfixable. as we may have already pointed out, which is good news, albeit in extreme sort of slow motion. Turns out it takes 6 years to escape the gravity of, you know, as I said, what can only be described as victim blaming. Institutionalized victim blaming, no less. Institutionalized Davo, actually. Victim blaming would be an understatement. Even Davo is an understatement. It's deny, attack, attack again, deny again, attack again, reverse victim and offender, attack for 3 years, deny for 3 years, and finally, acceptance. It's an interesting take on the 5 stages of bereavement, the 11 stages of social justice. It wouldn't surprise me if they're still in denial, actually. So it's more like Darvo Adad. Maybe you scumbags wouldn't be such violent thugs if you didn't keep Darvoing your dad. But yeah, it's quite the epic story. Mm-hmm. Empires have risen and fallen since it began. They even made it through the Summer of Love, apparently unscathed. That's impressive for a small business. I guess BLM didn't know about it, and they didn't care, since they just indiscriminately destroyed everything in their path. It would be nice if all the other businesses that got destroyed and ransacked by this privileged class
could hope. Maybe it's because Black Lives Matter was only destroying the small businesses of people in minority communities, and not in college towns.
It didn't matter if they had a sign in the window saying black owned businesses.
Yeah,
they got destroyed as well, and maybe they could hope for some kind of justice as well, and not just justice at the expense of the universities. I reckon Kamala Harris and Maxine Waters have got a few million dollars to spare. And everyone else who told the mob to create a crowd and never stop. Reparations, right? It means actually repairing shit. Shit that actually got broken. Not just the property, but the bones. You know, the human bones. No? Ah, well, never mind. But yeah, find out who was the lawyer for this bakery. Because whoever they are a miracle worker.
Yeah,
there's no doubt countless other stories like this that didn't have a happy ending. They ended with several ruined lives and a non-disclosure agreement, and that's why we've never heard of them. Mm-hmm. Sorry, this is supposed to be a good news story. I just can't help myself sometimes.
It is a good news story overall. They won their case. Like, it's probably one of these things that should never have gone to court to this extent anyway, simply because it's pretty open and shut, but at least they won their case. So yeah, I think that's a tremendous, tremendous victory. It's a tremendous. So I'm glad for them. So, all right. With that said, let me just double check to make sure we don't have any super chows, because I know that I'm not. I should be better about this. All right, no super chows. Let me check Rumble, because sometimes people send things through on Rumble. No, nothing there, but hello, Mr. 0303. And there should be more people in Rumble, but I know what, I get it. I get it, guys. You're used to what you're used to. So we're going to head into the patron-only show now, and we're going to be reading through the second half of this article. Hyperfemininity is not a trend, it is a movement. Hyperfemininity by Girly Girls for Girly Girls. Yes, because this was what I live for. Like, this is the kind of femininity that, I don't know, I feel like I'm gonna learn something important from this. And it's not, you know, it's funny, I saw Clueless not long ago, the movie with Alicia Silverstone and I don't know, a couple of other girls, Stacey Dash. I didn't get it. Like, I'm just saying, I didn't get it. Like, it was sort of like just a bunch of random events, and then it ends with her falling in love with, like, her stepbrother?
Yeah, it was, I think it was intended to be a dumb movie that just, you know, you could put opinions into and ideas into along the way, like a slice of life kind of story, but I don't know.
I don't like, that's the thing. I never seen it before, and what I assumed is it'd be something along the lines of maybe Heathers or Mean Girls. And I love Mean Girls. I think that's a great movie. I think all teenage girls should watch it, and I think that guys should watch it too, because because of what it's about, but they do it really well. But this doesn't follow a plot. Like it just kind of, I want to do nice things and here's my daddy. And, you know, I don't know. It just seemed a little like it wasn't sure what it wanted to do. And so it seemed aimless for like the first 2/3 of the film. But, yeah, I don't know. I'm saying, like, when I see this imagery, I think of the kind of, like, you know, Clueless, Mean Girls, Legally Blonde. There was that one movie that was about a girl. I don't know. There's a number of films like that, right? So this is what I thought of. But anyway, let's go ahead and do that. If you guys want to join us in the patron show, you have to become a Badger, so go to feedthebadger.com. $5 a month will get you into the Discord, where you'll be able to participate in the discussions or be a part of the chat while we go through this article and all the other articles that we usually go through in the patron show. But there's also other things. There's game nights. I think there's a game night tonight where they're going to be playing Cards Against Humanity. There are movie nights. They're usually on the weekend. They're not even really at night. They're like sort of during the day here in the West or in the United States. But like if you're in Europe, because I think some of the people who set this stuff, they're like across the pond. So it's later for them. And there's lots to do. So hopefully we will see you guys in the after show and also in the Discord. All right. So if you guys like this video, please smash like, subscribe if you're not already subscribed, hit the bell for notifications. Let us know what you guys think about all of this with a comment. And most importantly, please share this video, because sharing is caring. Thank you guys so much for coming on today's episode of HBR News, and we will talk to you all in the next video.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.